Our next speaker has done a lot to help establish a really solid tradition of scholarship focused on another of Malcolm's tradition, and that is the question of black liberation theology. Professor James Cone is on the faculty of Union Theological Seminary. He is a widely read scholar of black theology with one of his books, more recent books entitled For My People. He's also published recently a book entitled Martin and Malcolm, American Dream or American Nightmare. Professor Cone.
Thank you very much. My research has been on Martin King and Malcolm X, and that's who I want to talk about for a few moments today in terms of two roads to freedom. And I want to begin with quotations from Martin and Malcolm. Freedom is not free, Martin King. The price of freedom is death, Malcolm X. A man who won't die for something is not fit to live, Martin King. Respect me or put me to death, Malcolm X. If physical death is the price I must pay to free my white brothers and sisters from a permanent death of the spirit, then nothing could be more redemptive, Martin King. It is a time for martyrs now, and if I am to be one, it will be for the cause of brotherhood. That's the only thing that can save this country, Malcolm X. In February 1965, Malcolm's voice was silenced when assassins shot him as he started to speak to a crowd of blacks at the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem. In April, 3 years later, Martin, standing on a balcony of the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, was shot by a lone assassin. Both were 39 years old. Both, though mentally and physically exhausted, were still fighting and searching for the freedom that America promised but never delivered. Since his assassination, Martin King has been immortalized as a great American leader by blacks and whites alike. During the third Monday of each January, America celebrates his birthday with many tributes and speeches recounting his contribution to the nation. Similar events are held during the first week of April to mark his assassination. 250,000 people return to Washington, D.C., to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the March and the Dream, a day, according to Washington Post, that altered the nation. Again, on the 25th anniversary of the March on Washington, another celebration was held. And recently, the 25th anniversary of the Selma March was held in his honor. Now, the possibility that there were serious shortcomings in Martin King's perspective on black freedom seems to escape most black and white Americans. Saints have no major weaknesses, only minor lapses in judgment to remind us of their humanity. Now, in contrast to the public acclaim given to Martin King, Malcolm X is often forgotten by most Americans. Only a few blacks and even fewer whites celebrate his birthday on May 19 or even remember his assassination in February. When Malcolm is remembered, His significance is usually primarily defined as a black leader, as if he made little or no contribution to the nation as a whole. Now, Malcolm's devotees naturally resent the inordinate attention given to Martin King and the often obscurity of their hero. And in their indignation, they often make similar excessive claims about Malcolm, as if his thinking too is self-sufficient and in no need of a compliment or correction from anybody, especially from integrationists like Martin King. As during their lifetime, it is the Martin and Malcolm enthusiasts, the cult worshippers, who exaggerate their differences and individual accomplishments, and thereby not only misrepresent their significance for the 1950s and 60s, but more importantly, often misrepresent their meaning for us today. The admirers of Martin and Malcolm must be willing to consider their limitations, just as their critics must be willing to acknowledge their contributions in order that we might gain a usable and reasonable picture of them. Uncritical admirers and unkind critics of Martin and Malcolm have one thing in common. They have not seriously studied either person. Much of what they say about them is misinformation, usually derived from the popular myths about them. For if they had carefully reflected upon Martin and Malcolm's life and thought, they could easily see that the greatness of each person as an African-American leader is best perceived through an acknowledgement of their humanity. Therefore, to understand their meanings for the black community and for America generally, we must not romanticize or denigrate them, but rather see them as they saw themselves and each other, namely as real human beings with assets and liabilities that characterize all people. Now, what I want to do is to look briefly, or evaluate briefly, how Martin and Malcolm complemented each other, how each spoke a truth about America that could not be understood without the insights of the other. It is my contention that if we of all races are to create a just and human future, we need to listen to both Martin and Malcolm, as well as many others. But we look at Martin and Malcolm now. Now, the most important similarities between Martin and Malcolm was the goal for which they fought, namely an unqualified liberation of African Americans from the bonds of segregation and discrimination to self-determination as a people, from a feeling of inferiority and nobodiness to an affirmation of themselves as human beings. Now, to be sure, Martin's and Malcolm's great difference in historical and social origins influenced them to choose different paths, different roads in which to fight for freedom. Yet it is important to emphasize that they were, from the beginning of their ministry, fighting for the same goal, and their methods of achieving it, though different, complemented each other. Now, during his year of independence, that last year, Malcolm was explicit in identifying his work with Martin King. "Dr. King wants the same thing I want, freedom," he said. For both Martin and Malcolm, freedom meant black people affirming their humanity and demanding that whites recognize them as human beings. We declare our rights on this earth to be a human being, Malcolm proclaimed. To be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary. Now, according to Malcolm, the concepts of integration and separation were merely different methods which blacks employed in their struggle for freedom. Whites often used these terms to divide blacks, labeling the ones that they disapproved of, like Malcolm, as separatists and segregationists, and labeling the ones that they approved of, like Martin King, as integrationists and moderates. Malcolm, however, was adamant in his rejection of these labels. No, he said in that Ballad of Bullets speech, I am not for separation and you are not for integration. What you and I are for is freedom. Only you think that integration will get you freedom. I think separation will get me free. We both got the same objective. We've just got different ways of getting at it. Malcolm was relentless in making this point as he sought to bridge the gap that separated him from Martin King and the other civil rights activists. That's why he said, it's not a case of our people wanting either separation or integration. The use of these terms actually clouds the picture, he said. The 22 million Afro-Americans don't seek either separation or integration. They seek recognition and respect as human beings, unquote. Respect as human beings was the central theme of both Martin and Malcolm in their struggle for black freedom. Initially, Malcolm believed that respect was found primarily in a religio-cultural identity, affirming blackness, Africa, and rejecting whiteness, America. By contrast, initially, though Martin King believed that black people's cultural identification with Africa was important, yet he contended that respect could be achieved only by acquiring social and political power in America as Americans. Now, the differences between Martin's and Malcolm's approaches was partly due to geography. Each developed a strategy for freedom that was appropriate for the region in which they worked. They complemented each other in that they spoke to different groups of people. King addressed his message primarily to southern black Christians, Malcolm to northern blacks who were either indifferent to or alienated from Christianity. The nonviolent direct action approach, strongly oriented toward Christianity, was ideal for challenging legal segregation in the South. It enabled politically powerless blacks to resist racism and thereby let the world know that they would no longer tolerate the daily violations of their humanity by the dominant white society. Their religious faith bestowed upon them the feeling that they were created in the image of God and thus just as precious in God's sight as anybody else. The belief that they were created in the image of God, this instilled a sense of freedom in them and therefore a rebellious spirit in them, empowering them to fight nonviolently and even to risk death for their right to be treated as human beings. Using the Christian idea of the sacredness of human personality as the central religious claim in his work, Martin King galvanized southern blacks to take a stand for justice. 50,000 African Americans followed him in Montgomery, and even more after that successful stride toward freedom. Now, they didn't follow Martin King because he held a PhD degree, or because he was a follower of Gandhi, Thoreau, or liberal Protestant theology. Those persons and ideas, though contributing to the coherence of King's thinking on the matter, were not spiritually and culturally persuasive enough to arouse poor Southern black Christians to risk their lives for freedom. Martin King could motivate blacks to follow him because of the faith that he lived and that he preached, communicating God's life-giving spirit to the least of these, as he said. Through prophetic preaching of the gospel of Jesus, combined with fearless civil rights activity, Martin King inspired ordinary blacks, maids, cooks, and janitors, to believe in themselves as human beings, to stand up to white bigots, and to demand that the law recognize their humanity. By substituting tired feet for tired souls, they gave birth to the new black in Montgomery, and their spirit of resistance spread throughout the black community in America. Now, what Martin King did for poor black Christians in the South, Malcolm accomplished for ghetto blacks in the North. He empowered them to take a stand in the defense of their humanity, affirming their blackness, black step, black action, black culture, black path. Although this point was really never absent in Martin King, yet his faith and Southern middle class origin did not equip him to understand the depth of black deprivation in the urban ghettos in the North. Grassroots blacks in the North were the children of Malcolm, and Martin King knew it. Malcolm climbed out of the pits of the prison and dope dealing and street hawking of hot goods to become the Daniel for his people, a hot and angry and eloquently persuasive prophet who helped his brothers and sisters to be aware that they could indeed fight back against the oppressive structures of racism and persecution. Now, several eyewitnesses have given moving accounts of Malcolm's rallies in Harlem, and many of them are on videotape. And one can see the impact that he made upon the blacks who listened to him. Like Martin King, who stood fearless before the white policemen in the Birmingham and Selma, Alabama, Malcolm stood unafraid before the white cops of Harlem with his searing, almost sneering taunts and bold statements about the law and order troops in their midst. And he leveled against them the heavy artillery of scorn and ridicule. Malcolm is our sage and our saint, who delighted black audiences with his daring. He was not ridiculing the law and order guardians for the sake of race baiting. He was rather letting all of us know that we have no need to fear brutality and injustice when we are guilty of nothing but assembling and standing up for our God-given rights. He was heaping scorn on those blue uniforms to send a clear message to his people that so long as we stand in fear of the police and call them the man, we shall acknowledge that we are less than men and women and indeed deserve to be treated as boys and girls. Harlem blacks love Malcolm for his courage to speak the truth bluntly and without compromise. They love the power and the magic of his speech, his sense of drama, the exquisite humor which he could invoke to let the people see that they must stop being frightened of goons that who could only justify their existence with police clubs and billy guns. Malcolm inspired Harlem blacks to walk the streets with dignity and to be prepared to die for it. Treat me like a man or kill me, he said. And blacks knew he meant it. That's why they said no man, no one ever called Malcolm a nigger. Now as the public defender of black humanity and witness for the prosecution against white America, variety of audiences earned the title that Arthur Davis bestowed upon him in his eulogy, our shining black prince. Now, Malcolm's power was derived from the African heritage of blacks and not from the faith of Christianity. Our forced importation into this country was not the beginning of our heritage, but rather a rude interruption. Malcolm said the worst crime that white people have committed was to teach us to hate ourselves, destroying our past, and making us think that our forebears did nothing but pick cotton. For many years, Africa was dominated by the Europeans who projected it in a negative light. Jungles, savages, cannibals. Nothing civilized, says Malcolm. So blacks began to hate it. As Malcolm said, we didn't want anybody telling us anything about Africa, much less calling us Africans. And in hating Africa, we ended up hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the root of the tree, says Malcolm, and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. Malcolm believed that the self confidence to live as free human beings could only be achieved through a people's knowledge of their past. Just as a tree without roots is dead, he said, a people without history and cultural roots become a dead people. Malcolm ridiculed blacks who said, I ain't left nothing in Africa. Why, you left your mind in Africa, he said. Now, as Martin King contributed to the development of the new Negro in the South, Malcolm helped to resurrect the dead Negro in the North, creating a proud, angry black who was ready to die in the defense of his or her humanity. Northern blacks already possessed the political rights that Southern brothers and sisters were fighting to achieve, but they were not any better off. Malcolm even suggested that their plight was worse because the tricky white liberals who claimed to be the friend of the Negro, supporting the civil rights movement, were in fact the one most responsible for the ghettos in the North. As Martin King exposed the brutality of the white Southern bigots to the world, Malcolm revealed the hypocrisy of the white liberals, identifying them as the worst enemies of black freedom. Yes, he said, I will pull off that liberal's halo that he spends such efforts at cultivating. The North's liberals have been so long pointing an accusing finger at the South and getting away with it that they have fits when they are exposed as the world's worst hypocrites. I believe my own life, he says, mirrors this hypocrisy. I know nothing about the South. I am a creation of the northern white man and of his hypocritical attitudes toward the Negro, unquote. Long before the eruption of the urban riots in America, Malcolm warned of their coming, pointing to accusing finger at the white liberal as the one mainly to blame. He said, actually, America's most dangerous and threatening black person is the one who has been sealed up by the northerner in the black ghettos, the northern white power structure system, to keep talking about democracy while keeping the black person out of sight somewhere around the corner. Now, Malcolm spoke for a group of northern blacks who had lost all hope in Christianity and in America, the ones deepest in the mud, he'd like to say. With streetwise and truth-telling oratory, emphasizing the revolutionary side of African American history, he inspired urban blacks to take a good, long look at themselves in the mirror of his analysis and then be transformed by the true knowledge of who they are, namely the lost children of a proud and mighty African people. Southern black Christians and northern grassroots blacks, southern white bigots and northern white liberals, these were respectively the primary audiences and enemies of Martin King and Malcolm X. Both the black audiences that they wanted to empower and the white enemies that they wanted to expose influenced what they said and how they said it. No one could unmask the great danger of the white liberals' participation in the civil rights movement like Malcolm X. While civil rights leaders uncritically accepted their contribution and even overrated it, Malcolm said that the ultra New York liberal, who grins with his teeth, had more integration problems than they did in Mississippi. Now, on the other hand, Martin King, though deceived by many white liberals in the North, as he later realized, yet understood better than Malcolm the Bull Connors and the Jim Clarks of the South. Using the media, Martin made them reveal their brutality as the world looked on in utter disbelief. Martin and Malcolm knew their own limitations, and knew also the limitations of one were actually the strength of the other. There is no reason to pit them against each other, debating which of their methods, was the most appropriate for the achievement of black dignity, integration or separation, nonviolence or self-defense, up to a point. Both methods were effective in the regions in which they were employed. Martin and Malcolm represented two sides of W.E.B. Du Bois's double identity, African and American. The two warring ideas struggling to make sense out of our involuntary presence of Africans in North America. During the early part of their participation in the black freedom movement, their answer to Du Bois' question, "What am I?" was clear, emphatic, and opposite. American was Martin King's answer, and African was Malcolm's. The battle between them, to a large extent, was fought out in the white media, who portrayed them as adversaries. But they were not. On the contrary, they were like two peas in a pod, two soldiers fighting their enemies from different angles of vision, complementing their blind spot and correcting their errors. They form two sides of the necessary transformational dialectic. They needed each other. For then and also for now, they represent the yin and the yang deep in the soul of Black America. Thank you.